Welcome back to another edition of the Sound Singer Podcast. Today, my guest is Ruby Rose Fox. She is a multi-award winning artist, vocal and creative coach, and mental health pioneer. She's co-created a trauma-informed program for recording and performing artists aimed at revolutionizing our understanding of how our nervous system informs the way we connect with ourselves and each other. She is also the founder of Muscle Music, a nervous system training app. Ruby Rose, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to talk to you today because you are an expert not only in performing arts, but also in the nervous system and in mental health for artists. And I think this is something that's really necessary in our world today, especially in the music industry. And thankfully, we're living in an age where mental health is less of a stigma. It's being talked about more openly. And you're revolutionizing our understanding of how the nervous system works. You're revolutionizing the music industry. So it's much needed. And so thanks for being here.
Thank you so much. Such kind words to hear. Thank you.
How did you get started on your journey of artistry to now helping others?
The transition, I think, really started, of course, it started with my own dysregulation. So my own anxiety and freezing in the arts. So I studied art, I studied music, got thrown into it, and just noticed that I struggled. And it definitely felt a bit like a shame blanket, where I very much lived with this, or like a haunting, like I lived with this thing that I didn't think other people lived with, which was just felt like a heavy weight of knowing that things in the emotional nervous system realm were just a little bit harder for me than maybe other people. That was my perception anyway. Fast forward to kind of in the first 5-6 years of my songwriting career, I was training some women how to sing. And most all of them had trauma and were really struggling to open up their bodies. They were really struggling to make big sound. And I realized that I needed to approach the work in a very unique way, or else I was going to scare them and they were never going to sing again. So that was my first kind of aha moment of there's something around training and trauma. And then when I came across polyvagal theory, that's when the Christmas tree lights came on. That's when my brain just was on fire with connection of realizing how many kind of mysterious things that had happened to me that made total sense under this model. And I realized that like I was just not literate in this nervous system model. And that by being literate, I had so much less shame in my body. So I started to develop the work and to teach it and put it in a format for performers and to experiment with it myself, start regulating my own nervous system more seriously. And it kind of took off from there, and it really, it's the only thing besides music and theater in my life that really felt like, I don't know, an artistic obsession. Like I really just couldn't stop thinking about it and working on it. And it really became a form of mental health, became a form of art at a certain point for me.
What a journey. And so interesting how the nervous system affects our singing voice and our voice in general. I saw your video where you talked about doing a TED talk and the nerves were overtaking you. Can you tell us a bit about your experience?
Sure. So I had recent that the TED talk was right around the time that I was just exploring with my own nervous system on stage. And it was in front of maybe 4,000 people in the Boston Opera House. And it was, I was used to playing in front of maybe 300 or 500 people, and it was a different level. And my nervous system, I didn't even know it was going to happen because I didn't know that I was going to dysregulate until I was on stage. So it was one of the first moments that I was really able to leverage the tools that I had learned and then created for performers on myself and go from being frozen to fight or flight to safe and social in one performance. And realizing that if I didn't have those tools, I'm not sure how that performance would have gone or ended.
It's amazing for a mentor or a teacher to share such a vulnerable experience with their clients. It's not too often, because as teachers, we're taught to make sure that, you know, we're the leader, but we too can get nervous. We too have fight flight.
Something that I just want to put a point on when we start talking about nervous system work is that we often put the nervous system work in a model of achievement, which of course we're brought up in that model. But what I talk about every day on my program, Muscle Music, is that our bodies were meant to dysregulate. They were designed to dysregulate, and they're designed to regulate too. And leaders are meant to dysregulate and regulate in front of the people they're leading. Moms dysregulate, CEOs dysregulate, teachers dysregulate. And really, it's about making our dysregulation safe with others by calling it out, like you just did.
Yeah.
And that's actually the tool of maintaining leadership, is not hiding your dysregulation.
Yeah.
It's actually making, in the program, I call it calling out your dog. It's like in theater, they always say, like, if a dog is walking on stage, then there's nothing more exciting than seeing an animal on stage. There's no amount of great acting that's going to make a dog not exciting, because a dog is so real. And dysregulation is so real. It's like we see it, we can feel it, we can sense it. Like, we are hypersensitive as humans to a person who has any signs of dysregulation, because that's how we survived for millions of years. Well, not millions. Humans have only been here for 200,000, but you know what I mean. We couldn't evolve as animals and then later as hominoids without kind of assessing really carefully. And so, basically what I'm trying to say is that embracing your nervous system, loving your nervous system, and then showing others how you can make it safe for yourself and them, help them feel safe, which is ironic, because we're just trained to do the exact opposite. Therapists are trained to do the exact opposite. Moms and dads are taught to do the exact opposite. And teachers, I don't know about you, but the teachers that I grew up with, like, were not trained to even say, I'm sorry, or like even recognize when like a rift was created or repair was needed, or even if they made a mistake, it was just like not talked about.
That's so true. Speaking of nerves, maybe you could talk a little bit about stage fright. I know you had a post that it was an amazing post. It said, the only way to permanently dismantle stage fright is to no longer exist. Can you tell us a bit more about how to deal with stage fright?
Sure. So the sort of, I think, sort of masculine patriarchal version of getting rid of stage fright is like, get rid of stage fright forever and never experience it again. And you can't never, the goal is not to never have stage fright again. The goal is to have tools to regulate on stage and off stage before a performance, so you have a better chance of holding your safe and social state, or having a tool of like, if you are in freeze on stage, what do you do? Do you tell your audience? Do you tell yourself? Do you do an exercise? What do we do with our nervous system? So there's really no way to get rid of stage fright unless you die. You have to die. We have these beautiful systems which naturally dysregulate, and we don't have to necessarily hide them from an audience. We just have to understand them on a level that we can unshame them in real time with our audience. And actually watching someone unshame themselves on stage is the hero's journey. No audience is not going to root for you. If you're walking on stage and your hands are shaking and you're shaking, you could say, I'm so overly excited to see you and I'm a little scared, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I'm so happy to see you. There's no way that that audience is not going to be even more invested in you doing well. And then they're on your side. And then the whole show, they're rooting for you. So the cool thing about Stage Fright is that we don't have to get rid of it. We just have to unchain it publicly, which wow. is hard. It's hard.
You talked about shame. Very often I assign a client some homework on watching their performances back or listening back to their lesson recording. And I can relate to this. Sometimes shame comes up, right? Whenever there's a mistake or they could have done better. So, you know, watching ourselves back or listening to ourselves back, what would you say to someone who has a hard time doing that?
I would say to attend to the feeling in your body and treat it like a child that needs love. And once you can make friends with that part, then we can get curious about what you're feeling. I mean, there's the not quite liking what you're hearing is a great access point to go, okay, why? Is it a little nasally? Is it a vowel issue? Is it a volume issue? What exactly do you not like about your voice? Did someone in third grade tell you you sounded like Miss Piggy? And so every time you hear your voice, you hear Miss Piggy? Or like, you know, there's so many different dimensions of curiosity around why. And that's a portal into growth. And I always say, like, adversity is the way, you know, anytime that you get stuck in your singing is a huge portal to transformation.
I love that because you're pointing out constructive things to look at versus criticism, right?
And very often we also, it's none of, as a vocal teacher, it's none of my business how someone else wants to sound. You know what I mean? Like if they're, and their taste is so important. Like my taste as an artist is so important. Like when I'm recording and I hear a vocal and I go, oh, that's not right. It's not because I have a bad voice. It's because the song might need something. The song I'm singing might need a different kind of resonance. And that's a part of my taste as an artist. So like having a student be able to say, here's what I like and here's what I don't like is a part of, being in your own pleasure. Here's food I don't like, here's food I like. But there's a difference between that curiosity and sort of shame.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. Speaking of volume, as a coach, I can hear that underneath all the nerves, someone actually has an amazing instrument, but the nerves overtake them. And in one post, you talked about why can't I sing loud? And I know you have a new course coming up around that too.
The nervous system is our defense system and it's our play system. But when it goes into defense, it's going to very much shut down all of the mechanisms that are a part of the safe and social system. So when a safe and social system is on full throttle, we have our throat is going to feel open and our mouth is going to be wet and we're going to have warmth in the face. And as we dysregulate, like everybody knows this, when someone dysregulates, their face just sort of falls flat. So biologically, we lose almost everything we need to sing with. Yeah. Our diaphragmatic breath. So what happens is that in childhood, in middle school, in high school, in adulthood, life happens to us. And some of this is really normal and natural. I mean, if a child is screaming, and mom goes, no, you say it nicely. Mm-hmm. And they take their voice and they go, okay, cookie. And then they train their voice to have this high resonance. When they go to sing, they may feel very scared to be in their body. If in that moment of the cookie, the mom was scary to that nervous system. And I'm not saying the mom did anything wrong. This is just like life that happens. And then, so there's life that happens. And then there's real traumas. there's a vocal, a choir teacher might tell you that you can't sing, or your very first relationship might have been toxic. And when you were upset, they silenced you or shamed you. Your body, when trying to sing, is going to do everything that it can to make sure that you make the smallest sound possible. So I really honor my students when they're struggling in that way. And usually I think it takes about 5 sessions to really get safe enough to start making bigger sound. That's just what I've noticed. For LGBTQ students, this happens a lot. Voices that were maybe too feminine or too masculine, and they have used a sort of a filter on their voice to make sure that they sound like they think they should sound. So it's very important to, first of all, talk about that, call it out, talk about maybe what one thing that I'm building in this new course is, what's the story of your voice? What happened to your voice? So that we know. We don't have to necessarily dwell on it, but it's important to know what happened. And it's important to go really slow, because as we open up that jaw, I don't know how many times, like, vocal teachers know this, but the second you try to open the jaw, tears come. And sometimes anger comes too. And it's just trapped energy that needs to come out. But the teacher has to be super nurturing and safe and not achievement-based and not perfectionistic in order to get a student who's shut down to just open up even a tiny bit with their mouth. Yeah. And I will mention, there is just a biological component of when our jaws are, like, if I sing, my jaw is like 3 inches wide, there is just a biological, like, vulnerability to that. Flies can get in there. It's a vulnerable, we're opening our whole body to the elements. So there's also that too. And finally, for a lot of people, they just don't get that loud unless they're in a fight or they've been in a fight. So a lot of times it just reminds the body of really hard experiences that they've gone through. They might not have been traumatic, but the body is just very simply learned and is defending.
So true. Every singer has a story and every voice has a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then those stories tend to kind of create obstacles for us later.
Yeah, totally. I'll share one of mine. I was in a ska band as a kid, and we were super into, like, traditional Jamaican ska. And I was the only woman in, or girl in the band of 10 boys. And in ska, there were very few women around. And our first producer, who I love with all my heart, but even the band wanted this too. They wanted me to mimic what other Jamaican singers sounded like. And they sound like little girls. They sound very high. They're very innocent sounding. And at the time I was 16, 17, and I had a full grown woman voice, and it was bassy. And my real power was in my alto tenor range. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I just wasn't woman enough if I wasn't a soprano. So I was just trying to lift my voice so that I could be a woman. I don't want to be a man. I want to be a woman. And later, as an adult, I had to really unshame that and realize that a woman can be a tenor, and that doesn't make her any less of a woman. And then sort of the opposite happened, where I sort of, like, overdid it. I overcompensated, and I almost sang too low for a little while, as sort of a part of my healing journey, but they kind of went in the other direction. And then finally kind of self-corrected to the voice I have today. But those little experiences can completely change your voice, completely change how you feel. And frankly, I just had no one to talk to about it, because it's such a specific thing. And teachers, when I was younger, just, we didn't talk about personal things. We didn't talk about trauma. We didn't talk about the nervous system. It was very performance, achievement-based, methodology.
This is why I'm so glad we're talking about it now. And you have a new app, and it's not new, is it? Or it's been out for a while.
Well, it's just a year and a couple months old. So it's kind of a baby company. So I think it's new. Sure.
Yeah. Muscle Music app.
Yeah. It's a nervous system training gym. And it's this idea that like the nervous system is not something that we just achieve or fix. It's something that we need to keep flexible throughout our entire life. So just like you have to go to the gym and work out, that it's a way to flex your safe and social state. So we do check-ins, we do regulations where we kind of look at the nervous system ladder, see where we are today, kind of take a snapshot of what we're thinking about, get more information on our nervous system. But we do it together in an online community. And part of the work, part of like the weightlifting is actually being in like what we're doing right now, this safe and social state that is really uncomfortable for artists who tend to bypass this state completely. So when we're not performing, it's very easy to fall right down the ladder and dysregulate. It also makes marketing really hard because that's all sort of safe and social stuff. So it's a training gym, and it's a way to kind of not just become nervous system literate, but also to slowly and gently train your nervous system over time. Just like, you know, you wouldn't expect to go to the gym and just immediately have big muscles. It's something you want to be slow with, and for good reason. Like if we could potentially lose 100 pounds in one day, that'd be very scary because then you could gain it in 100 days, in one day. Exactly. So same thing with the nervous system. It's a very slow process, but once you develop resilience, it's harder to lose it than if you've built it slowly over time.
Can you talk a bit about the meditations that you have featured on there?
So actually a lot of the meditations are just tools in disguise. So there's a panic attack meditation, which is muscle contraction for when we're really in the fight or flight state. And then I have Phil Stutz's tools, but revamped through a trauma-informed lens and then also in an audio version. And here's why. I'll give you an example. I was playing a show in Milwaukee last summer. And I was super dysregulated by the sound person was just not safe for me. And I started to go down the ladder and I was just kind of in it. And my partner looked at me and he was like, Ruby, use your app. And I was like, oh yeah, right. Okay. So I put my tools as meditations because when we are dysregulated, we lose. If we're frozen, we have oxygen deprivation. So we really lose our prefrontal cortex. And when we're in fight or flight, we also lose some of our prefrontal cortex activity. It's going towards our limbs instead. So we don't remember. Even if we practice it sometimes, we don't remember. So part of the app is like making sure that you have the tools ready backstage, ready to go, so that you don't have to remember. All you have to do is notice and name your state. I'm either frozen or I'm in fight or flight. And then you go look for resources to walk you through it. Almost like a friend or a co-regulator to be there for you. Because this idea that we can just remember our tools when we're dysregulated is nonsense. We literally don't have the brain activity for that. We can try. And that's one of the things that I design on Muscle Music is that every regulation is exactly the same. It's like Mr. Rogers. Remember when he like put on his socks and there's something kind of soothing about that, but also it's motor memory so that we have kind of a physical remembering of what to do because being dysregulated is that hard.
Yeah. It's almost like too little too late if you're deep in it. So would you say you need to kind of catch yourself as you're going into fight flight? Is that even possible?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what I did that night was I noticed that I was on the edge. And then I really noticed, I tried to check and then I forgot my own lyrics. And that's when I thought to myself, wow, there's a problem. There's a real problem here. And I can't get through my set without remembering my own lyrics, which means my brain is deprived of oxygen. So what I did was I did the panic attack meditation, which is a series of planks and child's poses that I talk myself through. And what that did was that it brought me up the ladder. I wasn't not dysregulated, but it brought me up towards what's called the vagal break. And it brought my brain back online. And then once I started singing, I kind of got the safe and social system back online as well. So it's always a process. But it was a check. And if I didn't have that, I don't quite know what would have happened.
I love how you're incorporating the physical aspect of this. It's not just sitting still. But for many performers, movement or doing even something like child's pose can be so effective.
Yeah. And in fact, it's when I learned polyvagal theory, which is another way to talk about it, is the science of safety, which is something that therapists are just starting to incorporate. I learned that muscle contraction was just actually an enormous part of regulating. And artists tend to stay away from that because we think of muscle contraction as fitness. And a lot of us were either booted off the team or just not picked. So we don't like it. But it's an enormous part of regulation. And the kind of movements you want to do when you're frozen are different than the kinds of movements you want to do in fight or flight. And that's something that blew my mind so much that I ended up getting my personal training license, because I just wanted to know more about, like, what do we do with our bodies to handle the hormones.
This is probably why I feel so amazing after doing a strength training session.
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, the muscles are the bathroom of adrenaline and cortisol, which are the hormones of stress. And I always say, like, for women who are still bleeding or who have in the past, we know that if some dude came along and said, hey, just like think your way out of being dysregulated from your hormones, you'd be like, this is a part of my body. They're not going anywhere. I can't think my way out of this feeling. This is a hormonal problem, not a mental problem. And stress is a hormonal problem. It can be triggered by the mind, but once you're flooded with those hormones, it's not going away by positive thinking. No way. And everyone knows that because we've all tried it. It doesn't work. So flushing out your body with muscle contraction is one of the fastest ways to work through a fight or flight response. I think one of my missions is to help completely revolutionize training for artists for the next 10 years, because the science that I've been talking about has been around since 1992, since I was in second grade.
Wow.
It's been around. But no one has taken that science and applied it to performance, because we're so deeply siloed in our fields. Like, if you're a scientist, stay in that field. If you're an artist, stay in your lane. And somebody who doesn't have a social work degree or a therapy degree doing this work, there's moments where I'm like, am I allowed to be doing it? And it's like, yes, I am allowed to master my mental health as a non-therapeutic professional, even though, of course, teaching voice is very therapeutic in some ways.
It certainly is. Absolutely.
And I've taught it. I've taught at Yale, and something that I've had to say to them is like, listen, if you can get a 1600 on your SATs, you can learn the basics of your nervous system. But it's very conveniently left out because it serves capitalism. It serves power. It's a really great way to keep people in line and to keep people quiet. I'm not saying that Yale does. They're a wonderful institution, but in terms of like just the way that patriarchy works, it's a very convenient thing to leave out, even though the nervous system is actually, once you teach people how to talk about it, everyone becomes safer, everyone becomes happier, but there is a lot of fear around it, even in institutions, of like, well, if I let my students get in touch with their nervous system or like validate their nervous system, are they going to walk all over us? Are they going to manipulate us? Like, there's a lot of fear there. And my goal is to like help us not wait another two decades to take what we know and actually apply it structurally, institutionally, because there's so many of us with trauma. And frankly, those people deserve to be in the arts, and they deserve to get a really good education that can hold their whole being.
Wow. You certainly are revolutionizing the way we approach things from a mental health perspective. But where can people find you?
So I am at muscle.com/music.com. And I'm my main kind of portal right now is Instagram, for sort of like free thoughts, resources, videos. And the Muscle Music app is on iOS and Android. But it's also through my website as well. You can sign up through there, and it's a little cheaper through my site. You can also find me at rubyrosefoxmusic.com.
Can you tell us a little bit about your music? What style of music do you sing? And
oh, sure. Right now, I would probably call it art pop. It's sort of deeply in the singer-songwriter tradition of like Patti Smith and Leonard Cohen, and but also a little Annie Lennox in there too.
It's amazing to talk to you, and I hope to have you back on.
Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure.